You're listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene in Toronto, London, and New York on CIUT 89.5 FM. This podcast was originally broadcast on March 23rd, 2016. Good morning, you're listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Samara Thompson, and joining me are
Nicole Hamilton
and Małgorzata Nowacka.
And we are the hosts and producers of Turnout. We'd love your feedback. We can be reached by email at turnout@ciut.fm and connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. And you can find those links on our site, turnoutradio.com. Today's show is all about a dancer's dilemma, getting paid for what you love. And we're looking at this from all sides. For our gadget of the week, we'll discuss how spending a lot of money on a gadget will save you a lot of money later on. Then we're going to look at dancers getting paid equitable amounts for great work. Recently, a Rihanna and Drake music video was shot in Toronto, and there was an outcry from dancers about being underpaid. Two industry insiders will join us to give us their view on the matter. Up first, though, we'll look at the opposite ends of things, dancing for free. Małgorzata Nowacka is discussing University of Toronto's Festival of Dance, Canada's largest university dance festival. You're listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Hi, this is Małgorzata Nowacka, and I have here in the studio Sam Saunders. Welcome.
Thank you.
Who is representing the Festival of Dance, produced by University of Toronto. The festival is happening April 1st and 2nd, Friday and Saturday at 7:30 p.m., and it's pretty large. So how large is it?
Well, it's definitely campus-wide. It's the largest university dance festival in North America. It's the largest university dance festival in North America, so it's a pretty big show.
And would you say that not only students participate, it is open to all alumni, so there's a very large variety of performing happening. So what are some of the ends of the spectrum of performers that take place in a festival, would you say?
Well, yeah, just like you said, we have students participate, alumni, faculty. We're really open to anyone who is affiliated with the university, and we really encourage participation from everyone who is affiliated.
So that means that the festival showcases works by Arabesque Dance Company, which is very established. It means that there are works by people who've never done work before, and there's also a spectrum of dance as well.
Yeah, in terms of just skill level, we have everything ranging from beginners to professional level dancers, and it's really nice because they have an opportunity and a space to collaborate with each other and share dance, which is something everyone loves.
So because our show today is on the topic of money, and this festival is working on a community parameter, because it's amazing that it happens, but there is no compensation to be part of it because it's open to a spectrum of levels and desires, one could say. So what is the philosophy behind that?
The philosophy behind it, in terms of participants, meaning participants in every sense of the word, dancers and the crew members, we're all volunteers. For the theater, the festival really isn't about making a profit. We're just trying to put together a space for the community to come together and form a showcase, and the results are amazing. The audience gets to experience pieces that are really outstanding, not just because of the quality of the piece, but because for each of the pieces, you can really see the effort put in by the dancers because it's what they love. And so the audience can see the heart in every piece, which is something you can't put a price on. For the dancers, this festival is a place that's free from competition and obligation, and you can see this reflected in their pieces. Everyone's really here because it's something they love to do. Festival of Dance is a space for dancers to channel their passion and show something that they're really proud of. And personally, like for the team, the environment's incredible. The staff are always lovely, and we have a student-run team. Everyone's so competent and dedicated and really fun to be around. But like I said, it's all volunteer. So it's something that you can't, the friendships you forge and the people that I've had the privilege to work with, you can't put a price on that.
So essentially, it's a community-driven initiative where the results are shared with the community, and those are the parameters, and everybody goes in there knowing that that's what it is.
Yeah.
And that's where the results are, is that it's very clear, and people people are just excited about that. And it is a great opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
The stage is very beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
It's quite large.
Yeah, you've been on it, right?
Well, actually, yes.
Yeah. Actually, yes, I have.
So great. Well, thank you so much for coming on air today. This is again Sam Saunders talking about University of Toronto's Festival of Dance. It's a community driven initiative,
mm-hmm.
And it's the largest festival of dance in Canada, April 1st and 2nd, 7:30 p.m., and it's a pretty great experience. There are two different programs, so it's quite complicated, and there's more info that you can take a look at on our website at www.turnoutradio.com this afternoon. Thank you so much for being on air, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
Me, I be work, 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 work. You see me do me dirt, 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 dirt. And some better work, 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 work. When you walk a line, 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 line. I'm in the care for my ta 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 ta. Dry me, I desert you. No time to have you lurking. You make a like, now you don't like it. You know I dealt with you the nicest. Nobody touched me in the righteous. Nobody text me in a crisis. I believed all of your dreams are duration. You took my heart, all my keys, and my patience. You took my heart, I'm asleep, a decoration. You mistaken my love, I brought for you for foundation. All that I wanted from you was to give me something that I never had. Something that you never seen. Something that you never been. Mm-hmm. But I wake up and nothing's wrong. Just get ready for work, work, work. You see me happy work, 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 work. You see me do me dirt, 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 dirt. And some of that work, 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 work. Na, 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 na. When you walk out, na, 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 na. Before the table turn, 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 turn. Beg you something, please. Baby, don't you leave. Don't leave me stuck here in the streets. If I get another chance to, I will never, no, never neglect you. Against you, I just hope that it gets to you. I hope that you see this through. I hope that you see this true. What can I say? Please recognize I'm trying, baby.
Welcome back to Turnout, opening up the dance scene on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Samara Thompson.
And I'm Nicole Hamilton.
Dance artists use a huge array of interesting, useful, and sometimes bizarre gadgets to get their job done. Each week, we highlight a new tool, some kind of gizmo that attracts our curiosity. So this week, our theme is about money and dancers getting money and doing what they can with the money they have. So our gadget of the week is actually a pair of pants. So my, I know it doesn't sound like a gadget or a gizmo, but it is for me because it helps me do my job. So what works for me is Lululemon pants.
I love Lululemon.
As do I. And here's why I love them. I used to buy a lot of cheaper brands that would be, I mean, Lululemon pants are almost $100, sometimes more, sometimes a little bit less. That's a crazy amount for something I sweat in.
Right.
And roll around on the floor and all those sorts of things and stretch. And it's a lot of money. So I used to buy lesser brands that would cost a lot less. But I would go through them. I would go through them really fast. And they would wear out, tear, rip, all those fade, all those things. So I would go through 4 or 5 pairs a year. Then one day, about 10 years ago, I splurged. I decided I really want a pair of Lulus. So I went and bought a pair. I still have those same pants 10 years later. They haven't faded. I've had to fix one seam. But other than that, I still wear them. And so now all I buy are what I call my Lulus.
So yeah. I would think that that's definitely a great way for you to save money.
It is. Well, it's so counterintuitive to spend a crazy amount of money on one pair of pants and then to keep them. Now, I will say there are some versions that work better. I really love the Groove Pant and all their different versions of it, made with Luon, which they have several brand name fabrics. So the Luon one is the one that I think works, and they're Wonder Unders.
What are the Wonder Unders?
Wonder Unders are basically like tights. without feet.
Right.
They're leggings that go all the way down. Right. So they don't flare out at all. And they're both great. And the Wonder Unders are great, like with boots and a big sweater and for dance class.
So you think that this is definitely a gadget / item that dancers should have in their bag?
I was a hard sell on this one. It's hard to believe, but literally 10 years later, I have the same pants. So I haven't had to buy a ton of pants. I have a few. I keep them in rotation. I take care of them. Try not to put them in the dryer. It does make a difference. The other thing is Lululemon will fix things that break for you. So if a seam goes, they'll fix it for you. They'll shorten your pants for free as well. So that's my gadget of the week.
I love it.
We're going to take a short break. You've been listening to Turnout on CIUT 89.5 FM. Urbane Cyclist, now open until 7 most days, 280 College, just west of Spadina. Students save 10% in store. Some conditions apply. Or shop online 24/7 at urbanecyclist.com.
Right here, right now, every day. CIUT 89.5, Toronto. Sound of your city.
Listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Samara Thompson.
And I'm Nicole Hamilton.
Far too often, professional dancers are grossly underpaid when compared to other performance artists. Dancers who work in the commercial area of dance readily look over audition calls, hoping for a fantastic project that is exciting and challenging and pays well. In January of this year, the following audition call was made. Casting for Rihanna and Drake, looking for 60 professional and non-professional dancers, males and females, ages 19 to 40, will have to perform dance hall-like dancing. And in the call, they told people this is what you have to dance like, this is what you need to dress like. And again, it was a day rate or a video rate of $200. There was a huge outcry in the dance community. $200 for a day's work? Insulting? Or equitable? First up to discuss this is Essie Mensah with Nicole Hamilton.
Thank you, Samara. And thank you and welcome to the studio this morning, Essie.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's a pleasure. And so let's start here. You are an accomplished artist. There is so much to say with regards to your biography. It goes on for days. Mm-hmm. But you being a winner for Best Contemporary Dancer, that's the Black Canadian Award in 2014. And you've done a lot of work in the industry with artists such as Janelle Monáe, Nelly Furtado, Julie Black, etc. So I wanted to start by giving just a little bit of background for our listening audience, for those who don't know who you are, though that's probably unlikely, and start there by setting the tone as to your skill and your background. You had put a public call on Facebook for non-dancers to assist in raising the industry standard.
Yes.
Can you summarize your thoughts on the controversy surrounding that call that you had placed on Facebook and the low pay for dance artists?
The main reason why I put out the call was because I was getting a lot of messages, and I appreciated them. A lot of people were saying, oh, I'm so proud of you. You know, you did this Rihanna and Drake video. Sorry, I'm battling a cold.
That's all right.
And it felt very, I was very happy to hear the great feedback, the fact that people were able to notice me or see me in the video. But at the same time, the way that they were treating it made it seem like it was like the biggest milestone in my career. And that's, for me, was where I was challenging people, where I was getting messages, literally I was getting calls and messages from people. My cousins back in Africa were messaging me too. And everybody just seemed to be so proud of the fact that I was in this, you know, these two major artists. And it's the first time for me that I could say that I was actually in a video, a new video for a major artist, you know, at the time that the video or the song is at its height. But for me, my biggest issue was the fact that I've done so many other things with my life and my career that to me, it didn't equal out to the praises that I was getting.
Right.
And that was really the issue and the reason why I put the post forward, where I wanted to say thank you for the messages, but at the exact same time, I wrote, produced, and choreographed my own show last year, which for me is a bigger accolade for myself as an artist than it is me dancing in Rihanna and Drake's video, because the same way that they're working on their brand, I also have to do that for myself. So for me, it was about just saying, you know, dancers, I understand that we can take these opportunities as a great opportunity for ourselves and for our careers, but at the exact same time, how do we, as they're, you know, thinking about them, their selves and their bottom dollar, well, what is ours?
Right.
You know, we were taking advantage of with this great opportunity that, yes, we can say that, but at the exact same time, there's so much more that we can do that people need to see, so that way they're not just thinking that all we are dancers or when we show up in an artist a music video, essentially.
Right. And, you know, one of the things that individuals should be aware of is that in the call, specifically, that call that kind of spiked this mm-hmm. controversy, it indicated that they were seeking non-dancers or non-professional dancers as well as professional. And the pay rate was $200. Mm-hmm. So what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on the actual call and the wording around the fact that they were looking for non-professional dancers as well? So typically some individuals might, before you come in, I wanted to say some individuals might say, oh, well, you know what? They were looking for non-professional dancers.
Definitely.
So the 200 should suffice. But for those who are working at your level, mm-hmm. Who, of course, would consider it to be definitely underpaid, what are your thoughts on the wording of the call?
For me, they were very smart, and that's how they were able to get away with being able to make it the way that they did, because they made it not just a dance call. They knew that if they had just made it exclusively a dance call, they knew that they were paying under the fee that is a standard, you know, even from where Rihanna did her first music video to even, you know, where the music video standard is in America. And they knew that, you know. Director X isn't a very, very accomplished director and has done amazing things, you know, within the city and outside of the city, and has made his name and Toronto known because of the work that he does. So he's, you know, him and his company are well aware, and it's not just to call him out, but to me it's a bigger issue, whether we're looking at Rihanna and Drake or we're looking at other artists or anybody that basically comes in, you know what you're asking for. So, and that's the reason why the lineup was so long. You had 500 people show up because it was announced on the radio. It was all over Facebook. Everybody was sharing. Everybody showed up. And for me, it was people that were showing up that wanted to be in a Rihanna and Drake video, not necessarily saying that you were a dancehall dancer. Because
right.
I didn't know the dancehall community was that big in Toronto, to be truthful. Nobody, it's really not that big in Toronto.
Right.
So to say that all of those people showed up, and at the same time, you know, there were certain dancehall dancers that didn't get the chance to be in the video because of that exact same reason. So it's hard. And for me, I battled all up and until while the audition was even happening to even go to the audition. I really did not want to go. Mm. I really disagreed with it. But I sat there and something in my spirit just kept saying, I think you need to be there. I think you need to be there. And I honored it and I said, okay. You know, because I didn't want to, it's when you're literally looking at the bait and you know that the bait is there and you know that it's not good for you, but you're looking at it and you're seeing it staring at you in your own face. And you're just like, as much as I know that I shouldn't do this, I feel like this is, you know, and it's just your own personal choice. I'm going to take my own personal choice to say, you know what, no, I'm going to go down that road and be okay the fact that I choose to go down that road. And I feel like that's the decision that a lot of dancers have to go up against, because you end up having to talk yourself in or out of choosing to do dance jobs because of the fact that you're just like, I don't know if I should do this. I don't know if I agree whether or not this works for me and my own personal choices. I don't know if I should even think that hard about it and I should just show up, you know? Because you never really know what's going to happen. You do the call, you get in the video. Yeah, that's great. You end up seen in the video, but then that's it.
Right.
Rihanna does another video. She goes on tour. Everyone's like, oh, you're going to go on tour with Rihanna. I was like, nope, that's not happening. She's not doing auditions in Canada. I know one of my friends is dancing for her currently. So you're just getting a different level of reality, essentially, where you know that this is the parameters of what you're working in.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, recently, as you know, there was a community meeting that mm-hmm. discussed yes. this particular item. And you and I actually had an opportunity to speak prior to this interview, and you had some brilliant ideas about what you think that we should do mm-hmm. as artists to ensure that those directors, those non-dancers who are wishing to hire us for events, what we can do to assist in raising that industry standard. Can you share some of those thoughts as artists, what we can do to help to cause them to step out of the misunderstanding, the, mm-hmm. for lack of a better choice of words, the ignorance of probably not knowing and understanding the worth
yes.
of our tangible, and that was a word that you used, our yeah. tangible art.
Yeah.
What can we do as artists?
You know, to touch up on our conversation that we did have with music, they have music, physical music that you can listen to that is a product of their art. With visual artists, you actually have a painting or a photograph that actually shows you the tangible art. With dance, there is nothing of that. So it's really being able to say, okay, how do we increase the value of the work that we're doing? You know, and it's not necessarily across all dance forms, but it is specifically within an urban contemporary point of view. And for me, one of the suggestions that I was giving was being able to, you know, get into the room with the people that make the money in the city, to be able to, you know, maybe create a pitch contest so that way, you know, dancers and the energy that's actually is happening in the city can actually be seen on a bigger scale. Because to me, there's so many dance events, there's so many things that dancers invest their time and their money into, and then nobody shows up. And I think that that's the hardest thing, and that was the hardest thing for me coming up as a dancer, where you put months and months of work into it, and then you're on the stage and looking into the audience, and then there's 15, 20 people in an audience when you're hoping to get a full house.
Right.
And it's just getting out to those communities, and it's always that question, well, how do you get out to the general public? That's when you know whether or not you're successful in the dance community, is if the general public is actually coming out to your work. So how do we gather those people into that space to say, like, okay, this is what's happening in the city? You don't necessarily just have to go and watch the ballet. That's great, but these are other events that you can subscribe to. These are other people in the city that are doing amazing work that you can actually motivate and say, okay, great, we're going to pitch to you this show, you know, and this show can be done within your community. It can be done, you know, at a privacy in your home, say if somebody is hosting an event. Like there's an energy that we need to be able to mobilize within our city to be able to say, okay, this is how we get it out in outside of our own community and into the general public.
Right. And I love that. So basically as well, having a conversation, continuing to talk
yes.
about it helps to educate individuals.
Yes.
And we are almost out of time. And I feel like this is a topic that we could discuss for hours because of the essential importance of it.
Literally.
But one of the things I do want to ask you before we do wrap up is, what do you say? Can you help that artist out there? What would you suggest that they say to that director, that producer who's wishing to hire them? You know what? We can't pay you, mm-hmm. but it's going to give you a lot of opportunity to be seen.
Of course.
It's going to give you an opportunity to be on the stage, but we can't pay you. Yes, we are charging tickets mm-hmm. And we're charging individuals, but what can we do?
And I think that in those instances where you have to to kind of question whether or not you choose to do things pro bono or not, you have to ask yourself that question. You know, if this is not going to pay my bills, if this is not if I'm going to be investing more time than I am going to get anything out of it, then you need to choose to say no. And I think that that's where we need to start as a community. We need to choose to say no. We need to choose to ask for those people on the other side to advocate for us and say, you know what, no, we're actually going to put the money forward. I'm going to invest the money the same way that I'm investing into my art. I'm going to choose to invest into you to say that I appreciate you. And not everything has to come monetarily, because you can actually gain more than the money that you end up receiving. But it's a matter of being able to say, you know what, I understand what it is that you're going through, and the need for this is necessary.
Wonderful. I want to thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very, very much for having me, ladies.
It was a pleasure. It was a pleasure. And where can individuals find out more about you, AC?
You can find out about me on my website, www.acmensa.com, or on my Twitter, Instagram handler, at acmensa.
Wonderful. And let's continue the conversation to our listening audience. Tweet us if you have questions with regards to the topic today. And thank you again to AC Mensa for joining us. We're going to go to a quick music break.
Crisis. I believed all of your dreams are duration. You took my heart, all my keys, and my patience. You took my heart, I must leave a decoration. You mistaken my love, I brought for you for foundation. All that I wanted from you was to give me something that I never had, something that you never seen, something that you never been. Mm-hmm. But I wake up and everything's wrong. Just get ready for work, 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 work. You tell me I be work, 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 work. You see me do me dirt, 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 dirt. There's something about that work, 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 work. Na, 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 na. When you walk out, na, 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 na. Before the table turn, 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 turn. Beg you something, please. Baby, don't you leave. Don't leave me stuck here in the streets. If I get another chance to, I will never, no, never neglect you. Against you, I just hope that it gets to you. I hope that you see this through. I hope that you see this through. What can I say? Please recognize I'm trying, baby.
Welcome back to Turnout, opening up the dance scene on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Samara Thompson. John Reed is involved in many aspects of the dance world. He's the manager, dancer, and choreographer for the Supernaturals crew. He's the collaboration director of Making Moves Creative Collective, partnering with Pan Am Games in Puma, China. And he's the Canadian Actors Equity Association's dance outreach consultant, among a huge array of other experiences. Working as a professional commercial dancer and with Canada's Actors Equity gives him a unique perspective on equitable pay rates for dancers. Good morning.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
So my first question is, what's your experience as a commercial dancer in terms of the kind of work you get and what you can expect to get paid? If it's not too personal to ask.
No, first off, I wouldn't really self-identify as a commercial dancer. I'm a B-boy who so happens to work both in the not-for-profit realm, self-producing and doing community projects, as well as crossing over into corporate and commercial and marketing aspects of the industry.
But you have gone on a lot of paid gigs, so to speak. I mean, you do get paid for your work.
Yes, you also get paid for work in the not-for-profit sector, but it's really just about finding value and creating value in your work and the aesthetics and spaces you love to bring your dance and movement.
Is that hard?
It's hard to sit and wait for gigs, let's say, but it's always important to keep moving and creating these spaces to place your work and engage people.
How do you do that?
Well, over the years, I've created a variety of partnerships, whether it be commercial or it be writing grants for my own work and finding commissions for full-length pieces or what have you.
So let's go back for a minute to the Drake and Rihanna video. As we were just discussing in the last segment, dancers were offered $200 for being in this video. And as it the call said, professional and non-professional dancers. Do you think this was a fair rate? Was this equitable, or was this just a sneaky way to get around not paying them enough?
I would say that's pretty standard issue for the music industry in Canada, dancing in those. I wouldn't say it's necessarily equitable, but over doing music videos for many, many years, there usually is not a high priority put on budgets for dance artists. To see that the video actually put, what, $12,000, 200 into 60 dancers is actually surprising. But in order to break it up, you could have broken up a lot better for the professional artists and the background dancers.
Why didn't they do it?
Obviously, I was not in it, and I can't speak for the production choices. But as a producer myself, it would be a choice that I would make to differentiate how we support or professional rates for the professional dancers within the work. It's a programming choice. It's a production choice, and that rolls down to the dance artists and the way they get paid.
Now, because it was a non-union job, they can get away with certain number of things. So that they, if there were rehearsals, if there were actual bits of choreography that they had to learn, not just background dancing, not just grooving to the music and having a blast, because it looked like it was a really fun shoot, but it also looked like there was some choreography. If it were a union job, the pay would have had to be different. Is that correct?
Yes, but in my history in doing music videos, most of the calls are non-union, and there's kind of an emerging community of urban dance artists, particularly, are doing a ton of commercial work or different varieties of work that is currently unrepresented under a union association. That's part of the work I'm doing at Canadian Actors Equity, is to find ways to open up our membership to invite new styles and the diversity of forms to be represented through unionization. So when traditionally this new community hasn't been represented by a lot of unions and associations, it's hard to say that you could even have that open call, right? Because for union artists. But if you have a non-union call, you get most of the dancers who are currently non-union, which is most of the urban dance artists across the country.
So what advantage is there for dancers to be in a union? I mean, are they even allowed to go out to a non-union call?
Most would choose to sort of, when you're in union, you represent sort of standard minimums that you have within your association. Some of the benefits you have are, say, RSPs, health insurance, professional contracts, that if you get hurt on set, you're not disabled and have no coverage. There's protections in place. Sometimes you can submit, you know, a passion project that you're working for someone and find a way to make it happen within the union. But most of the time, there's choices you have to make as an artist around, do I represent my standard minimum and professionally support the other dancers that you stand with in the union to enforce those rates by not taking those gigs?
If you're a full-time working dancer in the commercial area, is there enough union work to support yourself? Assuming you're good and you generally get jobs. I mean, is there work?
This is kind of a catch-22. Like I just said, currently a lot of music videos say don't necessarily offer a lot of union gigs and union rates. And professional theater organizations we're still opening up our contracts so that they can offer equity contracts to this new community. So a lot of the thing is, how do you create the standard and value and the whole Canadian dance ecology to embrace paying dance artists at a professional standard, which for so many years has been neglected and often seen as a sort of ancillary add-on to a live arts experience. Well, let's get some dancers. Well, how much do we have in a budget? Oh, how much do we have left? Right? We are a fantastic, dynamic, exciting art form that should be represented at a higher level and should be budgeted as such.
So as that transition happens, again, I go back to, is there enough work? So if I'm a working dancer, what do I do? I need to make enough money, get enough gigs to be able to pay my rent and live, but also want to be supported by the wonderful benefits of being in a union would bring me. How do you balance that? How do you choose?
For me, when I started dancing, there was there was some b-boy scenes that were happening at community centers, maybe one event a year. I realized there was no sort of ecology to support my work besides the work that I was creating in front of me. So at first I realized, okay, I need to support bigger events, bigger battles with, say, larger prize money or larger shows. And after I grew the audience over maybe 1,000, 1,500 people to some event, then I also realized that there's a need to engage young people in terms of education and develop new audiences. So that way you can support your work with your own ticket sales, your own productions. But part of that responsibility as an artist self-producing is to then turn around and offer your dancers professional rates and protect the values that you're working for as an artist as well.
So for your work, even I'm assuming you're an equity member. I'm assuming, you know, given your position that so when you hire dancers, do you pay them equity rates?
Well, again, currently I am not an equity member because I'm the consultant at Equity. So there's a little bit of a conflict.
Okay.
But I'm also creating a way that we can open up. So a proof of artist status that we can then allow dancers to come in. Because right now you have to be offered an equity contract by a theater company or an engager, what we call them. And currently, if engagers aren't offering that contract, then we can't allow new dancers into the association. So again, I'm creating a new platform for artists to enter into the association by opening up this new way in through artist proof status. So it's a little bit of a catch-22. It's about creating a new access for communities that are not necessarily fitting in the old live performing arts model. We have to find new ways to engage dancers who have a diversity of form, practice in a wide variety of spaces.
Now, there's the Canadian Association of Dance Artists, CADA, which also, in some regards, does some of this. I mean, a lot of their focus is on contemporary dance, but not exclusively by any means. And they look at also having a pay equity. It's a really important issue for them. Mm-hmm. Is it a similar sort of thing that you're doing with equity? I mean, is it that sort of structure that you're looking at?
Well, what we do in equity is we have a business rep that not only sort of advocates and negotiates standard rates, but also enforces these contracts. It's the big difference of having a union and association or assisting dancers with vital tool sets that CADA makes in terms of standard rates and getting that information out there. I think the universal goal that we have is to inform our dancers around what our value is, how to protect yourself in contracts, but we also have a variety of different services that we offer our membership. CADA has an amazing training subsidy program that dancers need to take advantage of.
It's awesome.
And so you can get money back from going to rehearsal taking class or training. In equity, we have an amazing healthcare benefits package as well as RSPs and a whole wide variety of sort of dental to benefits that you get as a member. But again, it's the difference between a collective, more firm association and a support of an organization that really is giving you the toolkits to empower you as an artist, which is also an amazing thing.
Now, CADA, and going back to the video issue, I mean, they list for a dancer, emerging or professional, for any kind of film, photography, or video work should be paid $110 an hour.
Mm.
Is that industry standard? I mean, based on what your experience?
That's not my experience within like the actual field, but at the same time, that's a value that I would support. but it's not always attainable by producers. Again, how much video? Does the fact that the Drake Rihanna video put over 12K into dance artists is very surprising. It's not necessarily heard of very often.
Really?
Yeah, I can't tell you another dance music video that I can remember that had a budget that size.
And see, to me, that sounds so low. It's really, I mean, for 60 dancers, that's, I understand the total is high, but for 60 dancers.
Oh, that's yes. Not. Individually, that's definitely not very large. But wow. Again, the size and scope of a producer, you need to think about your vision.
Right.
But also about the fairness of your vision on the artist that you're employing.
How often do you think dancers are treated fairly?
It really depends. A lot of the work that we do, too, is in an ecology where the artist has to be a motivator and producer. So a lot of it we put on ourselves. We have big dreams, big visions. And in order to make it happen, a lot of the time we really rely on the support and energy of the people around us. It's important as a producer, artistic director, or choreographer not to burn out the people that you're with, but also really support their development through paying them and giving them enough pay that they can make their own space and further their own career as well. Can't just give time indefinitely until you have no time for yourself or your own rent, you know. So it is a balance, but as independent artists and producers, it's a value we should have to stand for in our own professional work as well as in our community advocacy.
It's a hard balance. That's really, it's tricky. How would one go about joining Equity if they were interested?
Currently, the way you can get is either be a member of a reciprocal association, say ACTRA, and then another way is to be offered equity contracts through performing arts, or sorry, an engager, so which is like a theater company. So what I'm in the process of doing, as I said before, is creating a new model, which is an artist can apply with their professional status through submitting their resume and some of the work that they've done in the year. So through that way, we can open the door to people who don't necessarily get equity contracts from a theater organization, because we don't all work in those spaces.
Right.
So it's important to have access to all range of dancers and to be able to represent the values of diversity of dance and support professional standards in those spaces.
Now, going back to you personally, you have an amazing resume of all the dance things you've done as a choreographer and a producer and a dancer, and you've done some really interesting stuff. What is it that draws you to be so involved in helping the community? Because you also have a huge history of doing that.
I'd have to say just my personal experience of getting terribly hurt on set. Also having, you know, not the right contract in place and someone running off with my money. It's a tricky world out there, and to have supports in place that can enable you and empower you to do your work is something that I've very rarely had in my professional experience. I've always had to build the support networks, build my own contracts and my own production, my own marketing. And how do you protect yourself when you're borderline burnout, creating all this work in front of you? It's important to offer these supports and services to dancers who are giving their all every day forward. So it's not an easy thing. I sort of subluxed my knee one time, and I still, you know, I have to pay rent at every month after that. I can't turn down gigs, so you just push through it. And then the sort of physio bills pile up, and you just it's not easy. But that also pushes me deeply to fight for these sort of standard rates and protections for artists who, you know, hopefully won't have to go through the same thing that I've been through.
Yeah, because, I mean, what you're doing is invaluable to dancers. And bringing awareness as well. I don't think people understand that how often dancers are underpaid, underappreciated, and underprotected.
Very much.
Well, we've been speaking with John Reed. Thank you so much for coming in to talk to us this morning.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm Samara Thompson. You're listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene on CIUT 89.5 FM. We're going to take a short break and be right back with more dance information. Welcome back to Turnout on CIUT 89.5 FM. Opening up the dance scene, I'm Samara Thompson.
I'm Nicole Hamilton.
And I'm Agujata Novatska.
So we've been talking all about a dancer's dilemma, getting paid for what you love. Now, all of us, the producers and hosts, we're all dancers and experienced in the dance world. So we also want to have a little chat about what we do about money, to save it, to spend it, to deal with it.
Yeah, we're experienced in this dilemma.
It is a dilemma.
It is.
Mel, do you want to start?
Well, sure. I mean, I'm not going to address the dilemma so directly, other than the fact that it does exist, and it is a catch-22 in that unless you're working and dancing all the time, chances are shortly you will be unemployable because the skills will downgrade pretty quickly. As dancers, we have to keep our bodies going, and we have to be in shape, and we have to keep the performance aspect going. And unless that is fueled consistently, unfortunately, it gets very rusty quickly. So I don't know. It is a big challenge between doing things to grow professionally and then getting the actual work that actually pays what it's supposed to. Mm. But having said that, in terms of money, I think we're talking about our favorite tips, and mine is to seek advice. So if it's having to do with what's deductible in your tax return, or whether you should work in a certain environment or not, is definitely to go out there and seek as much advice. And this seems so obvious, but it's not. I think people are a little bit hesitant to approach the topic of money within our community or not. So that's the first thing, is always don't be afraid of crossing boundaries. I think we should just be more open about talking about it to as many people and experts as we can.
Nicole.
Yeah, I think, you know what stood out for me today, and I wanted to comment on this, is when AC was referring to, or when we were started to speak about the exposure piece, because I find a lot of times, and I'm sure you both have experienced this, individuals will say, you know what, we want to hire you, we can't pay you, but you'll get exposure. And I think I love what Mal just said with regards to the advice piece. I think what I would also do in addition to that is when those artists, or pardon me, those producers, directors are hiring us, is to help them understand that, you know what, this, what I'm giving you, has value. I think that that adds to the saving money piece or income bringing piece, because if we don't speak on behalf of ourselves, who's going to, right? So that really stood out for me today. Now, as far as saving money is concerned, and again, I'm going to use Mal's word. I know this might seem obvious, but I'm on the road a lot. And so I used to have a habit of, and I kind of still dip into this every once in a while, but always eating out. Always eating out. Wherever I'm going, I'm constantly eating out. And for me, what I think is a great thing for artists to do, for dancers in particular, is to buy one of those little lunch packs. I purchased one, and now every night when I remember, I start putting all of my items in there and making sure that I've got my snacks, I've got my carrots, I've got my my nuts, all of those things. So as crazy as this sounds and as obvious as it sounds, pack something to eat during the day. It's amazing how much money I have spent when I have not packed and organized the night before.
Actually, I'm going to add to that. I have a portable kettle that's the size of a mug. And when I have long days at rehearsal, instead of buying tea three or four times a day or whatever, I'm just boiling it. And it's ridiculous, but amazing.
Yeah, and I would think that that's good too, because for somebody who might drink a lot of tea, instead of going to Starbucks every 5 minutes and grabbing
something. Sorry, Starbucks, we do love you.
We do love you, Starbucks. But having that portable item so that you can save that money. There are so many different tools, right, that are out there to help us do this, but we don't always utilize them.
Okay, so here's my take on this. I have 2 points. One, in terms of what Nicole was saying about making sure that you get paid for what you're doing is so important. But I was also told by a very experienced dance artist that she does one free gig a year. She gets paid for her work, but she always makes sure she does one freebie because she thinks it's important to do that also. And I think that's also important to keep in mind, that there is the other side of it. Yes, we deserve to get paid and paid appropriately, but there's also times when we need to just give.
I totally agree. There's the company that I work for. We actually support a lot of women's shelters, etc. And quite frankly, it's something that I often share with the dancers at our company as well. I think that it's really important to be able to give back, certainly, but using discretion. Right? Using discretion and understanding and knowing which events, those fundraising events, et cetera, are good for us to be able to give back to.
Well, and with this artist, sometimes she would often give her time to people that she felt would value her artistic efforts. Mm-hmm. Not always a charity, sometimes just an artist she felt that she could help
and invest into.
And I thought it was just a beautiful thing.
And also for emerging artists, this is a completely different topic, right? Because you're emerging, and there's that tricky area of first 3 years when you're out of school where maybe the ultimate peak of what the potential is as a performer hasn't manifested itself yet. And it's not going to manifest unless it is worked through working in something, right? So it is tricky. So I think it goes back to what the value is of what you're doing, what the context is, what you're getting out of it, how you're treated, and then always you can talk to people about it as well.
Certainly, I agree.
Well, we're out of time. You've been listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene on CIUT 89.5 FM. We're the producers and hosts for the show. I'm Samara Thompson.
I'm Nicole Hamilton.
And I'm Małgorzata Nowacka.
We've been discussing a dancer's dilemma, getting paid for what you love. We'd like to thank our guests for sharing their insights into this matter. We talked about the Rihanna and Drake video and equitable pay for dancers. We spoke with AC Mensah, a dancer and choreographer, and to John Reed, also a dancer and choreographer, and the Canadian Actors Equity Association Dance Outreach Consultant. And a thank you to Sam Saunders, the stage manager of the University of Toronto's Festival of Dance, whose dancers are getting paid with applause and gratitude. And we'd like to thank our fabulous tech, Ariel Samonte. We'd love your feedback. We can be reached by email at turnout@ciut.fm and connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram. And you can find those links on our site at turnoutradio.com. Thanks for listening. We hope your week finds you turning out to dance. Thank you for listening to Turnout, opening up the dance scene in Toronto, London, and New York on CIUT 89.5 FM. This podcast was originally broadcast on March 23rd, 2016.